Welcome to the Judge John Hodgman podcast. I'm Bailiff Jesse Thorne. This week, lingua fracas. Doug brings the case against his best friend, Ty. Ty insists on pronouncing foreign words with the proper accent when speaking in English. Doug says that's pretentious. He thinks Ty should just accept the common pronunciation of words when he's stateside. Who's right? Who's wrong? Only one man can decide. Please rise as Judge John Hodgman enters the courtroom.
Here are some helpful foreign phrases. Listen, and then repeat after me. Hello?
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good evening.
Good evening.
How are you, person of equal status?
How are you, person of equal status?
How are you, person of higher status?
How are you, person of equal status?
What hour does the sun have?
What hour does the sun have?
What is it that passes itself here?
What is it that passes itself here?
What good cuisine serves itself at this foodotech?
What good cuisine serves itself in this foodotech?
Do you serve snail cups?
Do you?
Be quiet, you people!
Do you serve snail cups?
Do you serve tongues and sea fruits?
Do you serve tongues and sea fruits?
Do you serve hot crab tendon and family-style sponge on unique rice?
Do you serve hot crab tendon and family-style sponge on unique rice?
That food does not taste me well.
That food does not taste me well.
Which of these four mysterious holes and basins is the toilet?
Which of these four mysterious holes and basins is the toilet?
I am prepared for exit.
I'm prepared for exit.
Jesse, swear them in.
Please rise and raise your right hands. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God or whatever?
I do.
Do you swear to abide by Judge John Hodgman's ruling, despite the fact that he himself is an advocate for Esperanto, the international language?
I do.
Very well, Judge Hodgman.
You may be seated. Doug versus Ty, the showdown of a lifetime. For an immediate summary judgment in one of your favor, can either one of you name the piece of culture that I was referencing in my dialogue, or my dialogo, with Jesse Thorne, my bailiff, our bailiff, your bailiff, as I entered the courtroom? Ty?
Is it the Mandarin Rosetta Stone?
No.
Rosetta
Stone. Be quiet, Ty. I already knew you were wrong. Doug, how wrong will you be?
Was it the Vietnamese English language?
Okay. No. Look, you guys have to understand, this is a true court of internet fake law. All right? This is not joking around time. I'm not looking for your jokes. I'm looking for your answers. I'm looking for your truth. Your own truth must be good enough. If you don't know the answer, just say, I don't know. Do you know?
I don't know.
You don't know.
I don't know either.
And how embarrassed will you be to learn that I am referencing a piece called Helpful Foreign Phrases that was included in the book That Is All by John Hodgman?
I am quite embarrassed.
Yes, as well you should be. Because when it comes to my own work, I have a simple maxim. If you purchase the book, you are freed from the obligation to read it. Did either of you purchase that book?
I haven't yet.
No.
Not yet.
Right. So
no.
You are still obliged to read it. You are both in contempt of this court. I'm really sorry to buzz market my own product on my own podcast. I should, you know what, I have a right to, but it is rather tasteless, and I apologize to all my listeners. I was going to simply play the very short cut called Transmitting Live from Mars from the De La Soul album 3 Feet High and Rising, which is simply a language lab or a French instructional tape over some groovy music. But then I realized I would be ripping off De La Soul by playing their music without permission. And I love and adore them, so I cannot do that. But I can rip me off plenty good. So, and I can speak plenty good too. Oh, you know what I should have done for this one? Oh, I'm so mad at myself. Please no one take offense. If either of you can name this cultural reference, you win the case. Hello. I can speak English. I learned it from a book. Ty or Doug? Hello. I can speak English. I learned it from a book. Ty or Doug?
I don't know. I don't know that one.
No, I don't know it either.
Faulty Towers!
Oh. Okay.
Manuel. I don't remember which episode it is. I'm sure someone will write in. But Manuel, the Spanish valet, played just on the precipice of offense by the actor who played him. I'm going to look him up very quickly. is saying these words while he is obscured by a giant moose head, which has fallen off. And the major walks by and he simply sees this moose head. And the moose head goes, hello, I can speak English. I learned it from a book. Andrew Sachs was the name of the actor who played Manuel on the precipice, on the cusp of offensiveness, and perhaps beyond the cusp. What do you think, Bailiff Jesse? Is Manuel in Faulty Towers an offensive Hispanic stereotype? I suppose it is.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I watched Faulty Towers relatively recently. I was surprised at how well it held up. And yes, he is an offensive stereotype.
He is an offensive stereotype. All right.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough for me to judge because I don't know that much about what the stereotypes of Spaniards are.
Right.
But it is a de facto. Manuel.
Yeah, it's a de facto foreigners are hilarious and dumb. Although the butt of every joke on the show is at the expense of Basil Fawlty. But that said, all right, I will put it in the record. Which one of you is keeping the record? Which one of you is a stenographer? Ty, Doug? Oh, you're the litigants. I forgot why we're even here. Well, one of you write this down in the record. The Fawlty Towers, which is a great and legendary work of television comedy, is slightly marred by the offensive stereotype that is Manuel. Now, I've got no further cultural references to give to you guys, so I must simply render judgment. Doug, you're wrong and Ty's right. Oh, maybe I should listen to the case. Doug, what's your problem okay. with Ty?
Well, I think I have sort of three problems.
Take your time, because it's not like I gave you any time to prepare at all. No? Ready?
No,
good.
I've got three problems.
Yeah. You have three problems with your friend Ty. They are one.
One, just on the surface level, the way he pronounces these words is kind of annoying and irritating and just uncool. And
do you know what I find irritating?
What?
The way you just pronounced irritating. But that's okay.
And, two, I think it's pretentious and show-offy. Mm-hmm. And it's a way for him to, you know, just show his intellectual superiority over people.
Uh-huh.
And I find that to be a bit mean-spirited.
Okay.
And then the third reason is that I think that it's best when you're communicating just to use the clearest, most easily understood form of pronunciation to get your form across. So I think it's kind of an inefficient use of language.
So you and Ty are friends for a long time, is that correct?
Yeah.
All right. What are your ages?
I'm 35.
So am I.
Okay. And how long have you guys known each other?
17 years.
Yeah, since we're 18. Okay. 18 ans. No, 18 ans. 18 ans.
Oui, exactement. Oui,
exactement. But, May, but your complaint is that Ty is walking around all the time, tossing off foreign words and phrases, and not merely that, but pronouncing them with exaggerated foreignness. Is that, would that sum up your complaint there, Doug?
Yes, all right. It's in an ostentatious way.
Do you know that using the word ostentatious is itself ostentatious? No. It's just something that was established at the modern language arts conference a couple of years ago. All right, Ty.
Yes.
How do you répondre?
I agree that I try to pronounce foreign words as closely to the native tongue pronunciation as I can, but not standard foreign words. I only do new foreign words in as close a of pronunciation as I can, because that's the only pronunciation we can go off of.
How do you distinguish between foreign words and new foreign words?
Well, for instance, I mean, a lot of French has been standardized in English. So we say in English,
like
Versailles, hors d'oeuvres.
Or Versailles, Missouri.
Exactly. Versailles, Missouri. Or hors d'oeuvres, which is a standard English phrase. But we don't say it exactly like the French say it. We would, you know, the French might say it closer to hors d'oeuvres or something like that. Oh. But we say hors d'oeuvres. What we don't say is horse d'oeuvres. You know, that's the way it's spelled, but we don't pronounce it that way. We pronounce it as close to the French as the American tongue can.
So
what I try to do.
So if a gunky, pretentious mispronunciation from decades past has now passed fully into the English lexicon, such as hors d'oeuvres, you'll say hors d'oeuvres. Uh-huh. But in your heart, you want to say, what was the phlegmy construction you gave again? Hors d'oeuvres.
yes.
Hors d'oeuvres.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, d'oeuvres. It's in the throat like that. Yes. Hors d'oeuvres.
Which, yeah, I think literally translates to outside of the eggs.
I believe so, yes. Or outside the opening.
Outside the opening. Oh, you mean so it's served before entering the dining room?
Yes. Served before the main course.
Yeah. You know, you hear that siren?
I do.
That's the police coming for you. because I just so blew you away with my off-the-cuff etymology that they're coming to throw you in jail. None of that tracks at all. I just wanted to call attention to the siren. And where are you guys anyway?
We're in New York City.
New York City. All right. And in Manhattan?
Manhattan. Yes.
Manhattan, right. That would be the original. What was the Native American?
The Manhattans.
The Manhattans?
I believe.
And Peter Minuit traded them a bunch of hors d'oeuvres for Manhattan and at a cocktail party sometime in the 17th century. Is that right?
Yeah, that's a story I heard.
All right. But give me an example of a nouvel mot that you pronounce far too accurately for Doug's taste.
Well, our latest big argument, we were at a Vietnamese restaurant, mm-hmm. and I enjoy a Vietnamese soup called pho.
Pho.
However, it's spelled pho, and Doug likes to call it pho.
Right.
That's not a standard English word yet. I hope in the future it will be. But for now, we can only go as close to the native pronunciation if we're looking to pronounce it correctly. That's the only source we have, is the native Vietnamese tongue. I say pho, which I don't necessarily think is the correct pronunciation, but I'm trying to do as close of an accurate pronunciation as my poor mimicry and English American accent will allow.
So you don't think that you don't think your pronunciation of the delicious beef and noodle soup of Vietnam,
mm-hmm.
is even your pretentious self-aggrandizing pronunciation that calls attention to yourself and your learnedness, even that is not truly authentic. Is that what you're saying?
It is not, and it's not self-aggrandizing. I feel like I should say it better than I can. Okay. I try to say it as well as I can.
Let's go. Let's work on it right now.
Okay.
Now,
can I say we did try, because we all ordered pho. It was like a group of four of us.
Sure.
And everyone went around and ordered
classic,
pho.
A classic pho for four.
Exactly, pho yeah. for four. And the waiter was,
I went
you know,
to a restaurant recently, and the jerk served us pho for four. Turns out it was a vegetarian place.
Phony pho for four?
but we all ordered pho first, and then it came to Thai, and the waiter, who was Vietnamese, knew exactly what we were talking about.
First,
and
I'd
then
like,
Thai sort of... Mm-hmm.
I was just going to say, first I'd like four pho, please, for the four of us.
That would be delicious.
I know. I would like I say pho, but I know that that is wrong, that it is a faux pas, because my friend Josh Sado, which is pronounced Sado, by the way, and not Sadow, just like Rachel Maddow, not Rachel Maddow, who lives in Seattle, or Seattle, as I call it, schooled me the hard way. He sent the pronunciation police for me for driving around Seattle with him saying faux this, faux that. He's like, no, it's pho. Pho. And I think that there is a West Coast, East Coast distinction, certainly in Seattle, which probably has the best, among the best Vietnamese food in the world that is not in Vietnam. You are looked down upon if you refer to it as pho. But let's work on, Jesse, what do you say?
Pho.
Pho. Okay, so Ty, how do you say it?
Pho.
And say it better now. Get closer to what your ideal is.
Pho.
One more time.
Pho.
This is one where the where
okay,
where
the, drop the beat.
This is one where the crime and the punishment for the crime are the same thing. Say it again.
Pho.
Pho. Pho. Now, are you pho? How am I doing it wrong? Pho.
I don't know how you're doing it wrong, because I'm doing it wrong as well.
But
I'm just doing my best approximation, because we did ask the waiter to pronounce it.
Yeah.
And it was really, I could get nowhere near the way he pronounced it. So this is my best approximation.
But it's only one syllable and one mouth sound. I mean,
I don't know. I think there's multiple mouth sounds on the vowel.
All right. And let me ask you this, Ty.
Yes.
When Doug ordered four pho,
uh-huh.
Did the waiter just sort of stand there blinking like, I don't know what you're talking about?
He did not. He knew exactly what Doug was ordering.
Right. And Doug, let me ask you this question. When the waiter received the order for four pho, did his manner change in any way? Did he seem pleased, angered, or indifferent to Ty's amateurish attempt to imitate his mouth sounds?
I think he seemed a little confused.
That's all hearsay, of course. But Ty, you took a sharp intake of breath there, which is either your expression of surprise and anger, or is you attempting to pronounce some other kind of foreign soup?
I don't think he was confused. I think he understood what I was saying to him. And probably to his ear, both our pronunciations sounded equally horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But he knew what both of us were ordering.
Who were your guests? Who are the other two in the pho party?
Our friend Kara and her sister Lisa.
Did either of them express frustration or use the traditional nonverbal communication of our people of eye rolling to indicate that they were annoyed by your pronunciation games?
I do not recall that happening at all.
They did. They definitely did.
Do you have depositions from either of these two people attesting to the fact that they cannot stand it when Ty does this?
I don't have a deposition, but I do know at one point in history, Kara struck Ty across the face over his pronunciation of the word mango.
I object to you, sir.
And I to mangoes. I actually love mangoes. I just wanted to object to something.
Thank you, Bailiff Jesse. I am now going to ask you, Doug, to repeat that entire sentence, not as punishment or to check your pronunciation, but just because I have never heard those words arranged in a sentence before, and they are glorious. Do you remember what you said?
I think I said that at one point in history, our friend Kara struck Ty across the face over his pronunciation of the word mango.
Oh, that is one of my favorite sentences of all time. Yeah, that was pretty good. So how do you pronounce, Ty, the word commonly pronounced by the fruit ignorant of the world, mango?
I pronounce it mango. I did go through a phase when we all first met where I enjoyed saying mango in what I thought was a humorous and endearing fashion, but it provoked violence in my friends.
What was your humorous and endearing pronunciation of mango?
I haven't done it in quite a while, but it was something along the lines of,
well, do you need some
mango?
Oh,
mango.
Oh,
mango.
Oh, stop it.
Or mango.
Stop.
That's so bad that it may actually be worse than mango from Saturday Night Live.
Why did you do that? This is a whole other... I mean, Doug, I have to chastise you for entering this immaterial and irrelevant evidence, because obviously Ty is not attempting to reproduce a traditional foreign language pronunciation of the word mango. He's just being insane. But your insanity here is almost as offensive as Manuel in Fawlty Towers. Why are you doing that?
I don't know why I did it. And I stopped shortly after Kara hit me in the face.
Full, like open hand or full fist?
It was an open hand. She did not punch me. It was more of a slap. It was in the Museum of the City of New York where we're going through, and I was saying mango a lot, and she couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah, why were you doing that? Were there historical mangoes? Is it the case that you were reading about how the streets of Lower Manhattan were originally paved with mango shells? Why were you doing that? Why were you? How old were you?
I was probably 18 at that time.
Okay, well, a lot can be forgiven, but not that. All right, that's all right. Let's go down the list. You did send in some words, Doug, that you find Ty pronounces hyperly or hyperly accurately.
Yes, and that is one of them.
So, Doug, I'd like you to read this list of words as though this were a language instruction tape, and Ty, I would like you to pronounce them the way you would snobbily correct Doug if you ever heard him pronouncing these words. We've already gone through faux, so let's move on to everyone's favorite, Greek sandwich.
Gyro.
Gyro.
Sartre.
Sartre.
Carnitas.
Carnitas.
Pappardelle.
Pappardelle.
Sacre bleu.
Sacre bleu.
Tamales.
Tamales.
Hyper.
Hyper.
Cologne.
But
I would say Cologne,
yeah.
Germany.
You say it the way you say it.
Cologne.
Yeah.
Cologne.
Goethe.
Goethe.
Femme.
Femme.
Acapulco.
Acapulco.
Puerto Vallarta.
Puerto Vallarta.
Homage.
Homage.
Fete.
Fete.
Forte.
Fort.
Bonafide.
Bona Fides.
Ayers Rock.
Uluru.
And Mount McKinley.
Denali.
All right. Let's... I'm going to... This is one where I'm actually just going to, I'm going to keep score here. So you said,
E-bear. I don't say E-bear. I like to say E-bear, but I know it's hyper. And if I'm using it in, you know, just general conversation, I'll say hyper, but I like to say E-bear.
Yeah, that's wrong. And that's a point for Doug.
With the lights turned out, be a scarf thrown over the bedside lamp.
Hyper. 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 So, Doug, is it your wish that I should find in your favor and then order Ty to cease pronouncing the words that way and instead have him pronounce them the way you pronounce them?
That's exactly what I want.
And those words and only those words?
Well, and I would like also future words that come up.
Future words? So not just nouvelle words, but words of the future as well?
So you want to dictate how I pronounce words for here on out?
Yes.
Oh, God.
I think you meant
that's my ultimate desire.
Herein.
You're concerned that he's going to say... Qua nuts instead of crow nuts, huh?
That's exactly what I'm worried about.
Ty, what is your... explain for me again your rationale for doing this.
Foreign words. English is a wonderful language because so many of our words are foreign words.
Sure.
They enter our language and they become standardized.
Look, for example, passport.
Passport?
Passport.
Okay, passport.
It is a corruption of passepartout. No?
Is it? I don't know.
C'est vrai.
Okay. I believe you.
Corduroy.
So, corduroy. Denim.
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 Yes, from Nîmes.
See? So what happens is these words, as they become traditional English words, they solidify in pronunciation. However, we have so many new words entering the language. We don't have any standard pronunciation of them yet. And the only source to find that pronunciation is in the native tongue. So I try to pronounce it as close to the native tongue as possible because that's the only guidepost we have on how to pronounce these new foreign words that are entering our language. Like I say, I believe pho will enter the language, whether it becomes more standard as pho, like you and Doug say, or as pho, as Jesse and I say, is up for the language itself to decide. But for now, all I can do is go with the only source I have, which is the native tongue. And I do mangle it, but I try.
But many of these words that Doug is particularly upset about your sort of hyper pronunciation of are pretty much well entered into the language. I mean, hyper, obviously.
Yes.
Right? I would say carnitas is pretty well entered into the language. You don't have to add a particular accent to that in order to be accurate.
Yeah, well, some of the Spanish pronunciations come from my mom's side of the family, so that's the way I heard them growing up. Like tamales that's what we had every Christmas, was our tamales. So that's how I say it.
And where did you grow up?
In Billings, Montana.
Montana.
Yes. Well, I say Montana.
Yeah, it's a regionalism.
I say Montaña.
And then there is some dispute also over some pronunciation of English words. We've already discussed mango, but there is also what? Cereal?
Yes, cereal.
How do you say that?
I say It's surreal, but that's a regional Montana pronunciation.
All right.
That's how I grew up saying surreal. There's not too many of those words like that in Montana, but there are a few.
What are some of the other ones? So that I would not offend a native Montanan the next time I'm I'm ordering Fruit Loops, I would say, could I have some of that Fruit Loop surreal? And would you pour in some milk, please?
You put milk with milk. An E.
Milk. No, that would be milk. How do you say it?
Milk.
Oh, now you're really doing it. Milk. Boy, I feel like I'm in Montana all of a sudden. What else? Miango. Miango. Any other Montananisms?
No, Montana is a pretty standard American accent. The one thing we do say, but I don't say it, but there are people in Montana that say gooms instead of gums. But I don't do that.
Meaning what?
Like the gums in your mouth?
Gooms?
Gooms, yes.
Really?
Really.
That is if you're saying that there are very few regional pronunciations, but one of them is gooms for gums? That's quite quite an outlier. How could you explain that?
I can't. It's fading away. Not too many people say it anymore, but some of the older Montanans or some of the people that grew up in more rural areas, they'll still say gooms.
Is that a leftover from some ethnic population?
No clue. Could be.
No clue. All right.
We also say honyakers. Honyakers for greenhorns.
But that's not a different pronunciation of greenhorn. That's a different word.
Yeah, honyaker. Exactly.
So what language is that derived from?
I think it's
you're speaking
Hungarian?
You understand you're speaking for all of Montana now.
I do understand.
I can pretty much guarantee you all of Montana is listening.
I think it's Hungarian, but I'm not sure.
All right. So much for your heritage. You shall never be welcome in Montana again. All right, I think I've heard everything I need to hear. I'm going to go into my chambre and take a few moments to arrange my thoughts, and then I will be regressar immediatamente.
Please rise as Judge John Hodgman exits the courtroom. Ty, is this honestly about you wanting to be cute or you wanting to be respectful of how other cultures pronounce their languages?
I want to be respectful. I work at a college where we have a lot of international students and a lot of immigrants, and I spend a lot of my day trying to figure out how to pronounce their names. And again, I mangle them a lot, but I always try to be as respectful as possible when pronouncing their names.
Do you believe that to be the case, Doug?
No, I don't. Ty is a pedantic person. You know, he's very smart, but he's constantly correcting me and my language and grammar. And I think when he pronounces these words, it's in a very show-off-y way. To like say, oh, I'm doing it right, you're doing it wrong. This is how it's actually pronounced. I don't think it's out of respect for the language. So I think his motivation is coming from a very selfish place.
Do you really pronounce like femme fatale as femme fatale?
I actually do that, yes.
You sound like a real jerk.
Right?
You guys both understand that there's no agreed upon pronunciation of the famous Greek mystery meat sandwich, the gyro, 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 yoro.
I believe the correct pronunciation is gyro.
Yes. But the other thing is the way Ty pronounces these, he also makes it a point. Not that like this is his interpretation, but this is the right way. So if I say gyro, he's like, it's gyro, you know?
When you say these words, do you at the same time raise one eyebrow?
I do. I do. And then I turn away from him. I show him my back.
Doug, how do you think your chances are in this case?
I think they're pretty good.
You seem confident. How about you, Ty?
I think Doug's doing pretty well.
Well, we'll find out in just a minute. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with Judge John Hodgman's decision.
Hello, I'm your Judge John Hodgman. The Judge John Hodgman podcast is brought to you every week by you, our members, of course. Thank you so much for your support of this podcast and all of your favorite podcasts at MaximumFun.org, and they are all your favorites. If you want to join the many member supporters of this podcast and this network, boy, oh boy, that would be fantastic. Just go to MaximumFun.org/join.
The Judge John Hodgman podcast is also brought to you this week by the good folks over at Babbel.
Did you know that learning actually makes a sound? It's true. Here's the sound. That's the sound of you learning a new language with Babbel.
You don't have to pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars to hire some private tutor to give you homework, or waste hours on apps that don't actually help you learn that language. Babbel is waiting for you with quick 10-minute lessons that are handcrafted by over 200 language experts, so you can start speaking a new language in 3 weeks.
Now, you know that I'm using Babbel to brush up on my Espanol so that Jesse and I can go to Mexico City one of these days. Mm-hmm. And every time I pronounce a word in Spanish, Jesse laughs at my pronunciation.
It's true.
But you know what? Babbel doesn't laugh at me. Babbel has speech recognition technology that helps me improve my pronunciation and accent. So it's a wonderful tool that I use. Studies from Michigan State University, I dare say Yale University, and others continue to prove Babbel is better. One study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. Take that, Yale and Michigan State.
Yeah, schools for fools. Babbel's for cools.
Here's a special limited time deal for only our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/Hodgman.
Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/Hodgman. That's spelled BABBEL.com/Hodgman. Rules and restrictions may apply. The Judge John Hodgman podcast is also brought to you this week by Made In.
Oh, when you're trying to buy cookware, it's like there's so many questions, so many choices, so many pros and cons. But you should know, Made In has only pros. Pros like Tom Colicchio, Nancy Silverton, Brooke Williamson. That's right. I changed the meaning of pro from good things to professionals who use Made In because they do. Professional chefs love Made In cookware because it's got so many pros.
Can I tell you something about Nancy Silverton, one of the Made In pros?
Yeah, I would love to hear it.
My friend used to work for Nancy Silverton or one of her restaurants. And not only did she adore Nancy Silverton, but Nancy Silverton personally catered her wedding.
That's a real pro move, if you ask me.
Yeah, just like getting Made In cookware. These are people with taste, if you get my double meaning.
I do.
This isn't a Johnny Come Lately company. This evolved from a 100-year-old kitchen supply business. And they work with multi-generational crafters to put together every single piece. So includes carbon steel, stainless clad, plateware, glassware. I know, John, you love all that stuff that you have in your cabinet.
Yeah, I got the glassware. I got the plateware. And I definitely love that carbon steel. And I love their stainless steel. It's got exactly what demanding chefs and I dare say demanding judges look for when they're buying cookware.
And you don't have to find a kitchen supply store. They sell it online. It's delivered straight to your door with the quality that the pros use.
And can I just say, it's at a fraction of the price of other top brands. That's for real. This is really good stuff, and it's really affordable. And yet, as affordable as it is, I'm going to tell you this. Judge John Hodgman listeners get 10% off full-priced items from Made In. For full details, visit madeincookware.com/JJHO10. That's madeincookware.com/JJHO10.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second and go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
Please rise as Judge John Hodgman re-enters the courtroom.
So, Ty, I was listening through the Japanese screen that separates me from you as I sit here, as I sat there in my chambre. And I heard Doug say that he did think you were trying to be cute. And you clearly are trying to be cute. Your argument about being respectful is undermined by the fact that you spent a lot of time saying, Mango. It is completely apparent to me that you enjoy drawing attention to yourself by saying things differently from others around you, even when there is an undisputable pronunciation. I think you can say Mongo, though. But let's set that aside. Your argument for being respectful is a powerful one, even though it is, in your case, disingenuous. Because, and I think faux really ties a buh on it, on this particular issue. Because this is a new word that is entering the English language. There is no consensus on how it will be spoken, as I realized when I was yelled at by Josh Sadu so many times in Seattle. And yet, and what consensus is forming, I think in my own anecdotal experience, is coalescing around faux, which we know is inaccurate. Why, it's encoded in the very name itself, faux. And so what does one do in such a situation? I honestly, as we went through word by word, the issues that, or the words that Doug takes issue with, found myself at odds with both of you at different times. And indeed, I don't know that a hard and fast line can be drawn between pronouncing things the typical way versus pronouncing things the way autentico, because even you acknowledge that you're not sure how to pronounce the authentic pronunciation of that delicious, delicious soup. And so therefore, you're constantly on a continuum between correct pronunciation and common usage, the desire to be respectful versus the desire to be understood. And if anything, I would imagine that it happens on a case-by-case basis. And so I'm going to do something for the first time here on the Judge John Hodgman podcast. I'm actually going to rule by points. This will be a judgment on points, not on a knockout. So let's just go down the list. Doug, you say faux. Ty, you say fuh. I'm yes. Sorry, Josh Sato. I got to go with faux on this one. I think that's what people are going to say. People are going to get mad. But I think, I think most people in America stupidly understand that soup as faux. And in time, as that soup becomes more and more prevalent, as it will, because it is one of the best soups in the world, there will be a second wave of snobs and pedants like you, Ty, who will come around pronouncing it pho. And when we get pho on the Food Network, then it'll be pho. But for now, it's pho. That one goes to Doug. For the Greek sandwich, Ty, you said something terrible. What was it? Gyro?
Gyro? I said gyro.
Gyro.
Yes.
Gyro. And what did you say?
I said gyro.
Gyro is incorrect.
Oh, yes.
Gyro is really hyper correct, hyper correct. But but I certainly have heard enough. Typically, gentlemen working in a Greek restaurant or a place where they will serve a gyro, saying gyro or gyro, gyro is what I said when I was a child. That one goes to Ty. Doug, you said Sartre. Ty, you said Sartre. Just simply saying Sartre at all earns you pretentious points. Trying to outdo someone on the pronunciation of it makes you a loathsome creature. That one goes to Doug.
Yeah.
Carnitas versus, what did you say, Ty?
Carnitas.
And that's how your aunt said it?
My mom.
Your mom or your mom's family said carnitas? And because she is Latina in some way? Of some heritage?
She is.
Where is
Mexican.
Mexican?
Yes.
I got to give that to Ty. Yes. You grew up that way. It's an honor of your people. Pappardelle has never been said in my hearing ever before in my life. That's crazy. Pappardelle is what it is. That one goes to Ty. Sacre bleu. Doug, you said?
Sacre bleu.
Right. And Ty,
no,
said,
you didn't say sacre
bleu. What did he say, Ty?
He said sacre bleu.
Sacre bleu? Sacre bleu?
It's sacre bleu. I remember thinking sacre bleu. That's that.
That was your take on it, Jesse? That's your memory? All right. That one goes to Ty, even though the way he said bleu really grossed me out. It's sacre bleu is wrong. Tamales versus tamales. Tamale is both a foodstuff and a word, which is obviously a corruption of the correct Spanish tamales. But tamale has been in the language and adopted by lots and lots of different non-Hispanic cultures. There is a long tradition of African Americans in the South making tamales in classic soul food restaurants, and those would be called tamales. I would accept tamale, but again, because of your alleged Mexican background, Ty, I will accept tamales as well. That one goes to Ty. Cologne, Germany. Oh, first of all, hiper versus hyper. No one should ever say hiper unless they are in Spain or in a Latin American country. That one goes to Doug. Cologne, you say cologne, Doug, like the
yes.
fragrance. You say, what did you say?
Cologne.
Cologne. I. Cologne. That one's a wash because obviously that's the correct pronunciation, but no one's going to know what you're talking about unless you say Cologne, Germany, right?
Yeah.
Right. And that would just make you sound incredibly pretentious. If you're in America talking about a foreign city, you wouldn't say Paris, you would say Paris. We'll go with Cologne. That one goes to Doug. Goethe, that was a wash. Femme, violent femmes, I think have to be the standard for American pronunciation of femme. So I'm going to give that one to Doug. You're now tied 5-5. Acapulco, you said the same way. Puerto Vallarta. You guys are old enough to have seen The Love Boat, so you both know how to pronounce that. That's a wash. Doug, you said homage, and that is beyond wrong. Homage is correct. That one goes to Ty. Fort or versus forte. Fort as an English pronunciation of forte, meaning strong in Latin and the Latin languages, or frezzo in Italian. Fort as an English pronunciation is long standing in our language. I didn't pick up the OED, but if I did, I bet you it goes back to dinosaur time. So that one goes to Doug. Bona fides versus bona fides. Bona fides is common English pronunciation of that particular phrase. Bona fides, I don't think people would understand what you were talking about. That one goes to Doug. And then we get into other ones. Ayers Rock, Uluru. That's not a pronunciation issue. That is a gringo versus aboriginal pronunciation issue. And given the crimes that were visited upon the Aboriginal people of Australia, it's hard not to respect the saying Uluru or Ayers Rock. But I gotta get, you know, I think they're both Denali versus Mount McKinley. I gotta say that they're both interchangeable. This is not a pronunciation issue. They're irrelevant. I appreciate your desire to be sensitive, and I think that it's a good move, and it's certainly a commendable and not offensive one, but it's not to the thing. So I have 6 points for Ty and 7 points for Doug.
Oh, yes, man.
And that means I have to find in Doug's favor.
Oh, my God.
Insofar, and I think that the math really does speak to the issue here. There are some in there that I totally am with you. You're either pronouncing, you're pronouncing the word according to your own heritage, or you're pronouncing the word that is in a way that is not merely more traditional, but more correctly understood, even in English language. I think more people will say homage than homage, although I bet I'll get some letters. And in a way that is that is not offensive or attention getting, but when you go kun, or when you go fum, or when you go south, you are asking for it. So on those words that I found in Doug's favor, faux, sart, sacre, no, hyper. Cone, femme. Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I missed one, guys.
Uh-oh.
Doug, in the French word for party is what, Doug?
I say it fate.
Incorrect. Fete is correct. Okay, it's a tie.
All right.
Wow, a last-minute tie. Here's what I'm going to say, though. Tie, it's a tie for tie. Say bona fides, fort, cologne, hyper, sart, faux. All of those pronunciations are, as of this moment, acceptable and should not be corrected, nor should you go out of your way to make a big stink out of saying something different at the bona fides restaurant or whatever. But right. Because you tied it up, I have to therefore order, I have to therefore find on the side of free will and every person's right to embarrass themselves at a restaurant by being a pedant and say that I find in Ty's favor, though I order him to seriously reconsider the pronunciation of those words that I pointed out. Bona fides, femme, sart, faux, and hyper in particular. Just take it easy, all right? Don't be a show off. This is the sound of a gavel.
Mango.
Judge John Hodgman rules that as all.
Please rise as Judge John Hodgman exits the courtroom. How do you feel, Doug?
You know, I feel pretty good. I mean, I figured the judge would lean towards personal liberty. But I think hearing this from Judge John Hodgman, he'll be a little more, or a little less show-offy with his language in the future.
I'm just glad I don't have to say homage.
Yeah, I don't think that that's a real one, guys.
That is.
Do people
say? He actually
say,
says homage.
I know he says that, but he also says fete for fete.
He really does do that. That's why he gets my goat. That's why I have to correct him. It just digs at me.
Yeah, those two, you have a right. You need to bring. Basically, what we're trying to establish here is consensus and understandability. And that is a rule of thumb. If people don't understand what you're saying, or you're going against what is the consensus, no matter how corrupt the consensus may be, then I think you have to check yourself. And I'm spelling check with a Q-U-E there.
I think that's a good rule of thumb.
All right. Jesse, did you have any other questions you wanted to ask these guys before I butted in?
No. Thank you, Judge Hodgman. Doug, Ty, thanks for joining us on the Judge John Hodgman podcast.
Merci beaucoup. Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Well, Judge Hodgman,
Quite the fate you're having back here.
Yeah, I thought I would just have a good old Prosecco and chicken cordon bleu personal fate. I'm wearing my fate hat.
Sure. The only kind of fate we have back where I come from in San Francisco is once in a while the local volunteer fire department will have a big spaghetti dinner.
Yeah, and I like to dress my spaghetti with the delicious Bahan Mai sandwich of Saigon.
We have a case on the docket.
Saigon, as they pronounce it, in Saigon, Pennsylvania.
We have a case on the docket. Would you like to clear it out?
I would like to hear the docket right away.
Amber writes, I live in Tyler, Texas, and I bought tickets for me and my husband, without his knowledge, to see They Might Be Giants in Austin on October 22nd. The show's midweek and will require us to take 2 days off work. My husband vetoes this idea. We live 4.5 hours away from Dallas and just took a day off to see Depeche Mode. What's the big deal? Okay, so we did see They Might Be Giants in March. But they might not tour again for a few years. What if they retire? Then I'll never see them live again. My husband asks, what about our jobs? Well, what about our jobs? I'm a second grade teacher, and he's a discipline specialist at a middle school. Taking 2 days off is no big deal. I think he just doesn't want to stand up during the show. Judge Hodgman, should we go to the show or sell the tickets?
Well, I have to confess that I'm prejudiced because my wife is a high school teacher here in New York City. And for that reason is constantly saying there's no way she can go on any trips that might require her to take a day off, such as the wonderfully recently completed boat party known as the Atlantic Ocean Festival of Comedy and Music, where I enjoyed your company, Jesse.
And I yours.
Or the forthcoming Jonathan Colton cruise, or any kind of boat party of any kind. And so therefore my initial reaction is, no, you cannot take a day off. You're teachers. You cannot be blowing off school. Think of the example you are setting for your second grade students and the bad kids that you have to discipline. And while I would say that for the second grade students, it probably doesn't matter all that much if you're going to blow off school in order to go to a They Might Be Giants concert, with regard to the discipline cases, the hard cases that your husband is dealing with, not only is it a bad example to set that he's gonna go and blow off school to go see a concert. That's exactly the opposite of the kind of self-discipline he's hoping to inspire and monitor in these students. But also to blow off 2 days of school to go see They Might Be Giants, while they are one of my favorite bands, to be sure, that's going to seem dramatically uncool to your kids in school, and therefore he's going to lose authority and lose power over the kids, and it's going to be class of 1984 all over again. So I say this: teachers, don't blow off school to go see concerts. Sorry, you've got an important job to do. Those kids need you. They Might Be Giants don't need you. Go buy 10 copies of their records. That'll be a good thing to do.
As I understand it, you've received some correspondence.
Yes, it was one of my great delights over the summer to first see and then engage with, using social media and internet, the man we know as Fresh Banana Man of the southbound Kennebunk Rest Plaza on Route 95, the main turnpike in Kennebunk, Maine. His name is Jonathan. And we've stayed in touch since I first sung his praises at Selling Bananas with the clarion call of Fresh Bananas Here. And he wrote me this letter. And I encouraged some of you to go and take pictures of him, which I later realized was probably a ill-thought-out thing to do that might scare another human being or make him feel menaced or get him fired. But luckily that didn't happen, and a few photos came in, and I shared some of them with you on the blog at MaximumFun.org. But then some of you started writing in saying, where is he? I've been going to the southbound Rest Plaza at Kennebunk over and over again, and he's not there. Well, let me tell you something, everybody. He was on a belated honeymoon with his wife, and he sent me this letter from the road. Hello. I have, during the course of my travels, visited a couple of airports and rest areas out of morbid curiosity. I wanted to see how many of these places had some influence from my home company. I also wanted to see how they sold their fresh bananas. Sad, sad day. Not only did I see fresh bananas, but I also saw no innovative methods to procure their sale to a visiting patron. What will it take to bring the travel experience around in such a way that people will engage customers in the sale of fresh bananas? I did, however, see a young man trying to encourage people to eat at his restaurant, which I will now discreetly mention has the word Fridays in the title. See, he knows, no buzz marketing. He was rather impressive in his methods, but utterly doomed because he wasn't quite fresh in his approach. It was the old-timey method of hawking with no personal flair. It almost smacked of a company-induced method, stale and oppressive. I did, however, go to a fresh farm stand. They were selling items, and there was a sense of genuine care about their products. They got a kick out of the fact that I sell fresh bananas, so I bought 2 farm-fresh peaches. Man, were they good. Sincerely, Jonathan, the Fresh Banana Man. I will continue to share letters and stories from him as they trickle in, but I believe that he's back at work now, and if you want to buy some fresh bananas, I can't recommend a banana salesman more highly. He is obviously very dedicated. Now, it turns out that Jonathan has a Twitter account, which he has authorized me to mention, which is Fresh Bananas Hia. That's F-R-E-S-H, Bananas, H-E-A, Fresh Bananas Hia, where you can go, and he's listing some of the things that customers say to him after he says fresh bananas here. And then you can also see the video that he has recorded of himself saying fresh bananas here. And you will probably want to buy some bananas. Thanks, Jonathan, for staying in touch.
That's all I've got on my docket, Judge Hodgman. It's been a pleasure to judge with you, as always.
Always a pleasure to judge with you as well. May I just say one thing? Since I've already indulged in a certain measure of buzz marketing for myself, may I just mention, Jesse, that Bill Corbett, the great Bill Corbett of Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Riff Tracks, and I will be appearing in the American Midwest in a live show of new comedies in 3 fantastic American cities. On Thursday, 3 October, we will be at the Cedar Cultural Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Friday, 4 October, Englert Theater in Iowa City, Iowa. And Saturday, 5 October, Barrymore Theater, Madison, Wisconsin. All the details are on johnhodgman.com/tour. You can also find out at johnhodgman.com how you could do the Hodgman Triathlon. If any one person, and I'm hoping there will be just one, or maybe at least one, goes to all 3 of those shows, guess what? You can come backstage and hang out with Bill and me. You get some of our leftover green room hummus. I'll give you a prize of some kind, and the Madison show is on me. So please, won't you come out and see us and see all of our and my upcoming appearances on johnhodgman.com/tour.
And hey, I'm actually going to be in Southern California with my public radio show Bullseye live at KPCC on October 25th. So if you want to come see me and Saturday Night Live's Bill Hader and my friend comedian Jasper Redd and lots of other cool folks, get your tickets now. It's already mostly sold out. There's only a few seats left. So go to kpcc.org/forum or follow the link from the homepage of MaximumFun.org and grab your tickets. It's Bullseye Live October 25th in Pasadena.
I shall look forward to that and to the next time we speak.
And our thanks for this week's title to Michael Davidson Jr.
Thanks, Michael.
The Judge John Hodgman podcast is a production of MaximumFun.org. Our special thanks to all of the folks who donate to support the show and all of our shows at MaximumFun.org/donate. The show is produced by Julia Smith and me, Jesse Thorne, and edited by Mark McConville. You can check out his podcast, Super Ego, in iTunes or online at GoSuperEgo.com. You can find John Hodgman online at AreasOfMyExpertise.com. If you have a case for Judge John Hodgman, go to MaximumFun.org/JJHO. If you have thoughts about the show, join the conversation on our forum at forum.MaximumFun.org and our Facebook group at Facebook.com/JudgeJohnHodgman. We'll see you online and next time right here on the Judge John Hodgman podcast.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
listener supported.